Good morning. One of the things that if I haven't got to know you yet, or if I haven't had too many conversations with you yet, one of the things that you will realize about me soon is that I love nature. Trees, particularly like hiking, snowshoeing in the winter is really, I love it. I know a lot of people don't like getting out in the winter. Many people that I've talked to over the years, but yeah, there's something about being in the forest. There's something about it's just peaceful. There's the crunch of branches and leaves under your feet. As you just sit and listen to the wind sway through the trees, the sound, the song that the birds sing, it's just peaceful. It's incredible. And this is not something just for me. Like, this is not super unique to me. I know you, many of you as well, love getting out and doing this. But there's actually something, it's a thing. It's called forest bathing. Has anybody heard of that before? Anybody? Yeah, a few of you guys. So this is a thing. It's called forest bathing, and it's this idea that getting out in nature, being surrounded by trees and in green spaces for consistent periods of time throughout your week is actually good for you. There was a study done in England in 2019 that gave this benchmark number of 120 minutes a week in being in nature around trees and green spaces is actually significantly impactful to our health and well-being. And that's the minimum number that starts to show a significant impact. Of course, if you go more, it increases, right? But trees are actually kind of cool. They're really fascinating, right? They do a lot of really cool things. Trees remove pollution from our air. They give us clean air to breathe. Trees and green spaces in big cities have been found to lower the temperature. And so they put them in dense urban areas to lower the temperature. Trees reduce noise population, erosion. They keep the land formed the way it is for like farmers' crops and things like that. And they're a source of food for us, for humans, for also for animals. They're pretty incredible. But this is not just some scientific fact, and I'm not just going to go on telling you scientific facts about trees, because the fact is that the Bible actually speaks a lot about trees. God speaks a lot about trees, and they're important. And so one of the things is that if you kind of step back for a minute and think the bigger picture of the Bible, trees, whether maybe you haven't seen this, but trees actually come up often and frequently at key moments and really important moments. So just think of this for a second. The beginning of the Bible, you have a significant story in the first pages of Genesis with a tree. You go through a little bit through the story, through the scriptures, and you hit the first psalm, and there's a tree. Okay, you go into the New Testament, and there's all kinds of stories and things that happen in moments, Jesus' ministry, key moments that happen around trees. One that comes to my mind is Zacchaeus. He climbs the sycamore tree, right? But there's many more. And then you go to the last pages of the story, and you have a significant tree at the end of the story as well. So God's doing something with trees. It's really fascinating if you have time to look at that in your own personal study. It's really interesting. But all this talk about trees, it actually relates to our passage this morning we're going to look at. And we're going to look at an odd little story from Genesis in chapter 21, an odd story about the life of Abraham and his encounters with this man named Abimelech. And of course, we're looking at this because at the end of this story, guess what happens? Something happens under a tree. Okay, so we're going to look at what happens and look at this story today. But to help us out a little bit, because this story is a B-side story, part of the story, we're going to look at the second half in 21. It's half of the story. There's the first half that happens in chapter 20, and then you have half of 21, and then the end of 21, so it's a little bit confusing. I'm going to try to fill in some of those gaps for you, okay? So, are you guys ready? You guys ready? Okay. Good, you're still with me. This is great. I haven't lost you yet. There's hope. Okay. So Genesis chapter 12, we go all the way back to the beginning of kind of where first meet Abraham. God calls Abraham from his homeland, somewhere down here, the land of Ur, and says, well, I'm going to call you out from this land that you've known. Leave your family, leave everything behind, and come to this land that you're not going to know. And so Abraham steps out in faith, and he follows God. And along the way through, we're going to look at 21, but even if you go all the way to 22, this whole section, 12 to 22 in Genesis, there's all kinds of cool things that happen where Abraham steps out in faith, he follows God's, he gains wealth, animals and slaves and people and land in some cases. In through his spirit, God gives Abraham the bravery and wisdom and the ability, the leadership skills and abilities. He puts him in places where he's having these political conversations with like high-powered military leaders and authority figures in this land. And he shows, so he really is at work in Abraham's life. And finally, we come around to chapter 20, which sort of sets up our story, where God calls Abraham to a particular land on his journey. That's going to come up behind me here. He calls him to this particular land, Gerar. It later changes its name, but we'll look at that in a second. But he calls him to this land of Gerar in the desert, the southern part of Jerusalem, of the land of Canaan. And he calls him in. And so Abraham and his wife, and they go into this land. And the first thing that happens here, which is really interesting, is that before they even get there, they see the city in the distance. And Abraham turns to his wife, Sarah, and says, "Hey, just so you know, when we show up, we're gonna lie. We're gonna lie. You're not my wife. Like, now you are, but when we get in, when we cross that city border, like, you're my sister, okay? That's what we're gonna tell people." And Sarah's like, "Okay, I'm game of your game. Let's do this," right? She's like, "Let's go." So she's on board. So they go in, and then they enter into this land, and the king takes notice of them, this king Abimelech. And he takes notice because he was the king. I'm sure he took notice when people entered his land. But he also noticed that Sarah was very beautiful. And so he sent some men over to Abraham's camp where he had settled to take Sarah, presumably to be his wife. And so that's just that. Now, after this happens, Abimelech goes to sleep, and God shows up to him in a dream. God shows up to him in a dream and says, "Abimelech, you're as good as dead." And Abimelech's like, "What in the world? Like, what is going on?" He's like freaked out. And he's like, "What did I do wrong? What did I do?" And God says, "Look, you've taken this man's wife." And he's like, "Whoa, whoa, hold on a second. Back up like five steps." He says, "They told me they were brother and sister. Like, what is going on? This doesn't make sense at all. Like, I did nothing wrong." He said, "I have a clear conscience." And God says, "Look, Abraham, that guy over there," he says, "I know him. That's my guy. That's my guy. I know him." He says, "And I know that you didn't do this intentionally, so that's why I kept you from sinning," God says to Abimelech. But he says to Abimelech, "What you need to do now is go and give Abraham back his wife. Go and give Sarah back. If you do, Abraham, when you do that, Abraham will pray for you, and you will have life." And he says, warns him, and says, "If you don't, you will surely die." So, naturally, Abimelech picks up, grabs Sarah and the slave, and sends her back and says, "Go, get out of here." But not only does he do that, he shows up to Abraham and he says, "Here's your wife back," but he says, "Here, take cattle, donkey, servants, take it all." He says, "I don't want to see you anymore. Like, I don't want to die. I don't want this. Just go. Go settle in the land," he says. "We're done." Okay? So this is their first interaction. You need to keep this in mind as we go through the second half of our story. And this brings us to the chapter that we're going to focus on, the second half of 21 here. And so we're going to look this morning together at Genesis 21. If you have Bibles, you can turn there with me. We're going to start reading in verse 22. So Genesis 21, verse 22. Good time for my little marker to fall out of my Bible here. It's good. It gives you guys more time. So Genesis 21, verse 22. This is what it says. "At that time, Abimelech and the commander of his army said to Abraham, 'God is with you in all that you do. Now, therefore, swear to me here by God that you will not deal with me falsely or my descendants, but deal kindly with me as I have with you, Now therefore swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me or my descendants, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have lived.' And so Abraham said, 'I swear I will do this.'" After some time, right, they have this first interaction. Abraham settles in the land, and after a time goes by, a few things happen, and Abimelech comes, this time with backup, because he's like, "I don't want to mess with this guy." He's a little bit worried. So he comes, commander of his army, and he says, "Look," and the first thing he says in verse 22, which you just read, "God is with you in all that you do." God is with you in all that you do. Abimelech notices that Abraham is not just some random foreigner or traveler, that he's not just some random alien or stranger looking for a place to stay. He notices there's something else going on in his life. He notices that God is at work. And this is important, and it's early, but I just want to pause here to say that this is important for us to see. Because if we look, the whole trajectory of Abraham's life is that he stepped out in faith, he's followed this call of God. He stepped out in faith. And when we do this, when we step out in faith, in obedience to God's call in our life, this is the thing we have to see from this, is that people notice. That people notice. And of course, this is for better or for worse. Because I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to tell you right away, I am not perfect, okay? And I don't want to claim to be because I'm not, and that would be, I'd be lying to you. So, sometimes we don't get it right, and Abraham is also an example of this. He has lots of shortcomings. There's a number of things. I mean, even this first interaction with Abimelech, before he even met the guy, he decided to lie to him. Like, who does that? That's a little bit wild. You almost wonder if there's something else going on, but anyway. So this is just crazy. And then there's another funny interaction where, he actually takes one of his Egyptian slaves that he has, and he actually abuses her and a child and just casts them out into the wilderness. And Sarah with him. And they cast them out for dead. But, you know, what's amazing is that even in our weaknesses, in Abraham's weaknesses, in God is with us, and God is gracious to us, and his plan still continues through us regardless, which is so humbling, very humbling. So even when we don't get it right, because there will be times we drop the ball, people notice God in our lives. It's important. People notice. So Abimelech notices this. He says, God's with you in all that you do. And then he does this funny kind of thing next where he says, look, let's cut a covenant. Now, I'm going to assume that most of you don't know what that means. Okay, because it's not something we usually do. Covenants are typically, they were something done around this time. They were like this, kind of like a peace act, a peace treaty in a way. So they had two parties, typically like they could have been differences in authority between them. They might have been on the same level, but you had two parties. And it typically would have looked something like, had this sort of structure where you had the names of the individuals that were a part of it. You would have had a history written down of their relationship between these two parties, and then you would have had stipulations or things on both sides that the people were, each person was supposed to hold up in this agreement. And then there was usually a witness to the covenant as well, someone to sign, to view it and say, yes, this is happening, and to hold the people accountable. And so they established this peace treaty, this covenant. And as they're about to do that, they're working out all the details, and they're figuring it out, and Abraham stops and says, hold on, I got a little problem. He says, I got a problem. So let's look at the text again here in verse 25. We'll pick it up there. So verse 25 says, Abraham reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized. And so Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not bring it up until now, and I have not heard of it until today. And so Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant. Abraham then set seven ewe lambs of the flock apart, and Abimelech said to Abraham, what is the meaning of these seven lambs that you've set apart? And he said, these seven ewe lambs that you will take from my hand, that they may be a witness for me that I have dug this well. Therefore, the place that they swore this oath was called Beersheba. And then Abimelech and the commander of his army rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. Okay. So Abraham and Abimelech, they make this covenant, they set the stipulations, but Abraham has this problem, and he brings up this issue of a well. Now, for many of us, water's not an issue, and it probably never has been an issue for most of us in our lives, but you got to remember, if you think back to our map, they're kind of in the desert in the bottom section of the land of Canaan there. It's desert. This is very dry, so water is not super common. So Abraham has dug this well, and somebody's come and taken it, and that's a big deal. Like, this is like, that's fighting words. Like, that would be like World War III today, if you think about it, right? Like, that would be huge. So Abimelech's like, Abraham says, we got to sort this out. And so you have this interaction where Abimelech makes it right, and he says, okay, I'll tell my men to get going. This is all good. You hold up your end of the deal. I'll hold up mine. Okay? And then Abraham does this funny thing where he says, look, just take these sheep, just so you know I'm not lying to you. Right? He says, I just want to be sure. I'm not trying to trick you. I'm not trying to deceive you. Abraham's attempting to live at peace. He's attempting to hold up his end of the covenant, to live at peace with those around him. He's saying, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to trick you or anything, but here's proof of that. Take these on top of everything else. And so this is where, even in the midst of serious conflict, right, where Abraham could have maybe fought for a little bit more, could have twisted the story a little bit to get a little bit extra, to get ahead, to take the extra step, but he's like, no, I'm going to live at peace. I'm going to respect Abimelech and respect the people around me. And this is what happens. This whole sort of interaction here, Abraham is working to hold up his end of the covenant. And this is where I want to kind of spend a little bit of time to focus, because this is important. Verse 23, if we go back to it, Abimelech says, show me and the land where you're staying and my descendants. He says, show me kindness. He sets out the stipulations for what he's expecting from Abraham. So show me kindness. Okay, I need you guys all to do me a favor. I'm going to teach you guys something here, okay? I need you all to put your hand up in front of your face like this for a second. Okay, I'm going to teach you guys, just in front of your mouth, sorry, not your eyes, your mouth. I'm going to teach you guys a Hebrew word, okay? So this Hebrew word here, show me, what's the word on the screen? What did I have? Sorry, make sure you get the right word. Show me kindness, right? This is the word chesed. Can you guys do that? You got to get a yeah, let's just do that to start. Ready? This is important, covering your mouth so you don't spit on anybody. I'm being thoughtful of all of you guys in the back. Yeah, chesed, right? So this is this word. It's really interesting biblical word. It's a really interesting word. Depending on what translation of the Bible you're reading, you might see it as a few different things. It might come up as kindness. It might come up as loyalty. It might come up as like loving kindness or mercy or sometimes even like goodness. It's a really complex word. Basically, in English, we have very precise words with precise definitions. And in other languages, like Hebrew, for example, they have one word that could mean a bunch of different things, and they're all connected. And so it's really hard to translate sometimes. That's why it's such a broad word. But when the Bible writers use this word, they use it kind of in two main ways. They're really important. Two main ways. And the first is to talk about this idea of dedication or devotion of people toward God. This idea of loving kindness and dedication that we show, that humans show towards God. That's the first significant way it's used. The other way is this idea of used to describe God's love and mercy towards us, towards humanity. So it's our chesed love towards God, our devotion to him and loyalty to him, and it's God's chesed love to us, his mercy and his grace to us. They use this word. And so when we think about this word, I want to just, because it's, again, it's kind of complex, so I want to make this nice and easy and not make you guys confused walking away. But we think of this word and think of what Abraham's doing and think of this what's going on here. In a way, this can kind of be summed up or seen in reflecting Jesus' teachings of loving God and love your neighbor. And I said, because you have this idea of like chesed or kindness or loyalty or whatever you want to translate it as or use, it's this idea of the Bible writers used to talk about the love of God, the loyalty that we show God. And when we do that, we experience God's grace and mercy and love in our lives, his chesed. And what happens with that is that our lives become an outpouring of that to others, right? And so this is all connected. So I think we want to see it like this. This idea that Abraham is reflecting this idea, this sort of process, this happening. And what's amazing is that when he does this, when he begins to reflect the work of God, the love of God, the character of God in his life, when he begins to reflect that to the people around him, something really incredible happens. Something really amazing happens where the whole landscape begins to change, literally, like the landscape begins to change around him. So let's look at verse 32 together in the text this morning. So verse 32, so they made a covenant at Beersheba. Abimelech and the commander of the army rose, returned to the land of the Philistines. And then Abraham did a couple things. He planted a tree, a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God, and Abraham lived many days in the land of the Philistines. Okay, something really cool happens. Abraham plants a tree. This is why I talked about trees in the beginning, this is the connection point. But this is really interesting because for a couple reasons. One, because he is the first person, the first human in the Bible to plant a tree. Never before this point have we seen a human planting a tree. Okay? So there's something going on here. There's something important we're supposed to notice, I think. The other thing is that, and this doesn't come through in English, unfortunately, which is very sad, but in the one translation here, I have ESV, I just read, it says he planted a tamarisk tree. But in the original languages, it actually says he planted a grove of trees. He planted a grove. He planted a bunch. So that's, we got to sort of look at it like that way. Instead of seeing it as one tree, we got to see he planted a bunch of trees. Trees and wells, again, trees are significant in the Bible, right? And for the Bible writer, the tree and water as well often represents and is an image of, in the scriptures, of God's presence, where God dwells, of where God is at work, what God is doing. And so this is really important for us to notice here, because God is doing something. I mean, Abimelech even noticed this, right? That God is at work. So we have to see that. And then he calls on the name of the Lord. So Abraham goes, he plants a bunch of trees by the well, that he dug, plants a bunch of trees, and he postures himself in front of God, and he calls on the name of the Lord. But he doesn't just call any name. He calls on Yahweh, the eternal God. He recognizes that this God he's calling on, God, is the same God that called him from this land long ago and brought him on this journey of faith, the same God that he's asking and pleading and petitioning to work now and move now in this land where he's settled, and the God that will work and continue in the future. Think about these trees, right? If you plant a bunch of trees, how long do they take to grow? A long time. You start with a little sapling. Like they take forever. And so Abraham plants these trees, and they become a symbol of God's presence, of God's work, and what he's doing for this moment, right now where Abraham is, but also for years to come. And hence we see in the story, this is where this location gets its name. These men swore an oath, and this name of this place gets a name change because of the accounts that happen here. Beersheba means the well of the oath. So the whole landscape begins to change, both physically but also like in a number of ways here. And then the last thing, Abraham stayed in the land. He stayed in the land as a presence and as a witness to what God was doing, as a presence and a witness to the character of God. It's really, really cool. So as we sort of come to this point here, I want to just pose the question, because I think this is important for us to think through, is that if we look at how this life that Abraham is modeling, this life of chesed love, of expressing God's love and mercy and kindness to our neighbors, to those around us, how do we model this in a way, kingdom living? How do we show and live loves of kindness toward our community, toward those around us? And there's a couple ways things that Abraham does help us to see how to do this. And there's the first one. The first one is to plant markers of God's faithfulness. The first thing Abraham does is plant a tree, right? Again, trees represented God's presence. They were markers to what God was doing. And this is really interesting, really amazing, is one of the things, as my family and I were preparing to come up here and preparing to start ministry and move up here and all that, one of the most amazing things in the interview process that I got a chance to talk to Dan about was all the ministries that go on in this community. Like, truly incredible, and it was really a driver for me, I'm going to be honest. In being like, okay, this is a good place. This is where God is. This is what God is doing something here. I just think of like our free giveaway we mentioned this morning. I think of St. Vincent's Kitchen. I think of just the generosity that I've in the few weeks that my family and I have been here, generosity toward us, totally unexpected, but also your act of generosity to other people that I've been able to witness as well is incredible. And these are the ways, right, that we plant markers of God's faithfulness. Like this free giveaway started, I have no idea when it started, but it probably started as something really small, probably started as something, you know, and look, and it grows over time. These ministries that we do, they grow over time, and people notice, and they become markers and witnesses to what God is doing, to how God is working and moving to this, the faithfulness of God, to the faithfulness of God. It's truly incredible. So that's the first thing, plant markers of God's faithfulness in our community. The second thing is petition and prayer for God's presence to come. One of my highlights of the week is midweek prayer meeting I get a chance to be a part of. If you guys don't know, there's a group of people that come every Wednesday morning and just spend time in prayer together, praying for our community, praying for each other, praying for you guys, praying for our leaders, praying for God to come and to work and to move. It's truly incredible. And I know that, you know, of course, I don't want to guilt anybody. Wednesdays, that is its thing, and if you can't make it, I get it. But this idea of prayer, right, petitioning ourselves in a position of prayer, like regularly in our lives, is so important. Like when you go and you walk into work in the morning, and you cross into the door, like through the threshold of the doorstep into your work, and it's just taking a split second to say, God, use me to be a blessing today. God, plant people in my way so that I can be a witness to you and what you're doing. God, give me that little nudge for somebody who needs prayer. Like, it's those little things, right? With work, school, when you're at the grocery store, wherever you find yourself, right? It's regularly bringing yourself to those moments of short moments of prayer consistently, petitioning and asking God to come and to work. And then the third thing is to place ourselves as signposts to pointing to God's eternal kingdom. This is our witness. This is the conversations that we have over coffee. This is the people that we invite into our house and share a meal with. This is the way that we serve and care for our community. We become signposts that point to Jesus, that point to how he's changed our life, that point to the hope that's there, the goodness that's there, all the amazing things that come with Jesus and how he changes our life. This is an amazing story, the story of Abraham, his whole life, but this story in particular. And I love that Abraham is a model of faith for us. He's a model of what the life of faith in the kingdom is all about in many ways, and this is one. And what's really, really cool is that the Bible writers in the New Testament also hold Abraham up to this life, this pinnacle of faith. Hebrews chapter 11 says this. It says, therefore, since we have... let me just go through here. Sorry, I'm reading the wrong passage. Hold on. Hebrews 11. Here we go. Read the right one. This is what he says about Abraham, the author of Hebrews. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, Abraham went into the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. And then verse 10 says this, for he was looking forward to a city that had its foundations, whose designer and builder was God. This is Abraham. He followed God in faith and saw that God was doing something so much bigger than him. And it's through these moments and these interactions that God uses him to be a blessing to those around him. It's living this life of faith that Abraham becomes a blessing, and that, like I said, literally the ground changes. Like, think about it. When trees grow up, like, landscapes change. Things change. Now, this hope is not just something that we can hold up to the Old Testament saints, and Hebrews 11 has a bunch. It's also something that is modeled for us in the perfect way in Jesus. You go one chapter over from in Hebrews chapter 12. It says, therefore, this is the one I misread here, but this is 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Let us run with endurance the race that's set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is now seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And then verse 3 says, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary and faint-hearted. So that you may not grow weary and faint-hearted. This kingdom life, this life of faith that we're called into is not something that's easy. As many of you can attest to, it's something that's actually very difficult. It's actually very weighty at moments. You know, talking about conversations with people over dinner or coffee, like those can be very hard and often are. But we need to make sure that we're looking to Jesus who gives us the strength to get through, who gives us the strength to do this, who gives us the power through his Spirit to do these things, to begin to live this life. So a really cool opportunity that I had a few years ago was to be able to go and plant trees. So there's a picture, should be up behind me. I got to go into this field and plant trees. Every year in the spring, I would go and plant these trees. Like little saplings, they were only like this big and like all kinds of different ones. And like hundreds of them for like 4 years. And I had doing this, and I got doing this a couple of years, and I thought, you know, I'm never going to see the potential of what this becomes. I'm never going to notice it. In my lifetime, maybe I'll get a chance to go back to where I planted those trees at some point. I don't know. But I'm never going to see that. But I know that those trees will have an impact for years to come, that they'll leave a mark on that land that will impact so many more people. And in the same way, we look forward to this greater kingdom. We look forward to God coming in power and God coming and establishing his kingdom in full. And as we wait and as we anticipate that kingdom that's coming, as we anticipate that, we need to do our part. There is a part we need to play here and now. And that's what we see from Abraham's life. Plant markers of God's faithfulness. Petition and pray for God's power and presence to come and work, and point ourselves, put ourselves as signposts to that reality, to that hope, that life change. This is the life that we're called to. This is the life of faith. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for this opportunity this morning to study your word. Thank you that your word is active and alive and sharper than a two-edged sword. And so I just pray that your word today would cut through our lives, our hearts, and that you would, and that we'd be moved from here, that you would draw us into this life of faith, this beautiful life of faith. We thank you that you love us so much that you want to partner with us, that you want to work to change our world, our community. You want to do that with us. And so we just thank you for that. It truly is a grace in our lives. So God, would you use us in the coming weeks, in the coming months? And would we be people who change our landscape, who bring your goodness and love and kingdom forward, God, in all that we do. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.